politician, and honorable members of that. And then, after that, we will get into consideration of the draft budget put at work. And in terms of the process, is that after having a deliberative and made some consideration, we will then have to adopt the report, which I don't think that that can happen today. We will look at how we are progressing, and either have a meeting on Friday or adopt or on Tuesday next week before we get into debate. Reason being that we have sought clarification on when we are expected to submit, and it is not a requirement that we submit for 83 days before we debate. We can submit a day before. So if we adopt our budget report on Tuesday, we will still be in line in terms of having it debated on Wednesday the 20th. I'm saying that because it is possible that I may not be in on Friday due to the National Executive Committee of the African National Congress scheduled for this weekend. And if it is that on Monday in the morning, I'm expected to be there. If it's that, I mean on Friday in the morning, I'm expected to be there. Which would then mean that it will not be possible to adopt on Friday. If we look at the fact that we are only starting to consider it today, what may happen is that we can then meet on Tuesday to adopt the report. Because after having made comments, the report still needs to be amended to incorporate whatever Charles has made during the consideration process. Honorable Sugar, I saw your hand up.
Mashe, I don't have a problem with it. It's just, you know, our programs, personal programs, and diaries is quite booked a month ahead of us. And for instance, on Monday night, I need to be at the meeting which I can't postpone. So that will mean I can only travel on Tuesday morning. And if this meeting is on Tuesday morning, it could be a problem for me personally. So I don't know if it's going to be then in the afternoon, but I mean then it's going to be too late for the ITC. So I don't know. The same with Friday. Friday is also problematic for me because there's other meetings. Yeah, well, 10 o'clock on Tuesday.
Thanks, Chair. I also have a meeting on Monday night in Johannesburg, and we could be here by 10 o'clock if we maybe were to be starting by 10 or Tuesday. We both fly down from Dover. Yeah.
Well, let me start by first saying that I really appreciate the cooperation from members of the Portfolio Committee. Because if you look at what has made us to learn in this situation, it's not our making as members of the Portfolio Committee. It's how the department is conducting itself. Because for each entity, we have to be fair and allow them to go back to align their threat plan that topic is happening. And from our side, it is really a cooperation exercise from the portfolio committee side. We could have taken a route of going through the reporter's team and not allow the department an opportunity to go and align and correct what needs to be corrected. So it is in that spirit that I am thanking members for their cooperation, because we are meeting longer than other committees are. The same situation that happened last year, where we had to meet 3 times in a week. Attend meetings of DTS, attend meetings of economic development, and then have our own meeting. There is no committee that is functioning in that way. That then results with me also having to go through documents at night and sleep later hours. So I really think that it is important for the department to get to that understanding that when you delay things and you are not coordinating on your side, you are actually having a negative impact on us and delaying our processes. And we would ask the department to cooperate and pull up its socks and not expect that that has to come only from our side as a portfolio committee. We don't account to the department accounts to us. So it can't be correct that the department relaxes, doesn't coordinate things, and bring them to the committee raw as they are, and then subject members of the committee that are holding the same department accountable to fix those things. It can't be correct. And I hope that it is for the last time that when we are dealing with the test or anything, the department will not be organized and it will hold us back. I hope it is for the last time.
I think also from my part, I'll have to maybe negotiate on Tuesday, because Tuesday are the official days of the other committee. So if they will tell the committee, I will then have to face with them for the 27th on Tuesday.
Yes, Madam Speaker, thank you. This, although we sit very long and we miss PTCs, there's consequences for me as a member of the of my party, because my party expect from me to sit in all the EPCs, or half of it. I can sit in all of them. So and now, you know, because of the department, I miss some of those EPC and I'm less supporting my party in those EPCs. So I'm requesting that we add some sort of official letter just to explain the situation so that we can negotiate with our parties, as to say, and tell them, you know, exactly this is the situation. If it's not, I can request that. Thank you.
Can we get a response from the department?
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. No, we commit, Chair, that this will never happen again. And we'll pull up ourselves and we'll work harder to make sure that we meet all the deadlines.
I know the harder for the chair, but hardest will even do better.
Thank you. Can I then get a guidance on members that are committed on Tuesday. The first, the suitable time at which we can then apply for his meeting on Tuesday to adopt our report. I am also having a full commitment on Monday, which means flying in back here would either be late in the evening or early in the morning. When I say early in the morning, it means for me to take a 6 o'clock flight in 7. I have to wake up at 3. So that is the situation that it put us at. And the body can just talk for itself. I'm tired. Even if you want to push, if you're tired, you're tired. Can you get an indication of what would be the best time? Can I go?
Maybe we must just try to debate how long this meeting is going to be. If the meeting can be an hour, I mean, then you can do it from 11 or 12 o'clock. It's not a problem. But if the meeting is going to take another day out of our schedule, that's going to be a huge problem. But if we can commit ourselves to a maximum of an hour and commit ourselves so that we get the information over the weekend so that we can go through it in our own time and just come here and approve it, I don't think an hour will be there too little for that. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, I think the Honourable Kruger's making a very sensible suggestion. I think that we need to make the most of our time today and get as much as we possibly can done today to make a shorter meeting on Tuesday viable. So even if that means taking recesses to review material or whatever it has to be, that's what we must do. Get as much done as possible and then insist that the department get the stuff to us today. Hopefully by the end of Friday. Well, within the next 24 hours so that we can deliberate it and then, you know, come and you know, review the material on the final report on Tuesday.
I think an hour or 2 hours is what we would need for next week, because what we are going to be doing today is that we are going to go through a report that we had a draft on. Although after we were all given the copies of the first draft, I had to sit down and go through that draft and make sure that the report is ready. So what we are having today is the second draft, which I think that we have to spend most of our time today to take into consideration input from other parties, because the input from the ANC are already in that report in terms of our assessment. So what is going to be happening today is that we are going to be accommodating other political parties with their input, and then we deliver it on those. Whatever is in the report, yes, as what we are debating, will then result in the third draft of the report, which is what will come in on Tuesday for us then to say this is our report, we are adopting it. So Tuesday, longest will be 2 hours. There's nothing that still has to come for the department. All the information that we are processing now is on our side. The only thing that we are asking now is this draft presentation, which will also then be incorporated in the report, in the second draft report.
So then, Chef, to give the body time to recover, maybe we should suggest the 12 o'clock start on Tuesday.
Is that an opposite view? 12 o'clock on Tuesday? Thank you very much. Can we then proceed to take item number 2, apology?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. The apology that I received from Honorable Mlaotsi, he stated that he is in the Eastern Cape.
the deputy minister.
I didn't receive anything from my. I just heard about what has been discussed yesterday, but I didn't receive anything in French.
Yes, madam. I must also apologize profusely for not bringing a written or a second white apology. But to me, it was transmitted by the CPO yesterday that they are en route to Brazil. Thank you.
I hope that this is the last time, because your core function as the parliamentary liaison officer is to ensure that there is stability between the portfolio committee and the department, meaning that all information and documents that need to come to us are the ones that we receive, so it that we get that information. Also, the same applies in terms of information that has to come from us to the department. You are at the center. So I'm hoping that this is the last time that you are apologizing, because if you can't bring an apology, what is it then that you are paid for? Okay. Can we then move forward and check the presentation on the business supplier development strategy?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair. And good morning, honourable members. This is the presentation of the unit called Institutes and Grants and Grants Unit. It's one of the units that they migrated from Department of Trade and Industry. We had to reconfigure some of the programs so that we can cover all the activities of the department. So the program, it falls under one program that was had a line item with National Treasury, which is Best Business Supplier Development Program. So we utilized budget to develop other programs that we are going to present today. Thank you.
Thank you, Acting DG, and good morning, Honourable Chair, and the Honourable Members, and my colleagues from the Department, as well as everyone who's around here. My name is Kholani Thulare. I'm currently the Acting Chief Director overseeing this unit called the Incentives and Grants Unit. And previously, I've been a director responsible for the Best Business Supplier Development Program. I'm going to take you through the presentation of what our plans are for the current financial year, including what we intend to achieve in line with the department's strategic objectives. The structure of my presentation is on this slide. I'll be taking you through our strategic objectives, the legislative policy strategies that we are governed under, the objectives, missions, our units, programs, the business units, performance plan, financial plans, risks, challenges and areas of improvement, organizational human needs, and key projects that we'll be focusing on in the current financial year. As you are aware, the current strategic objectives of the department is to create an enabling environment for the development and growth of sustainable small businesses that would ensure that they contribute to the creation of employment and economic growth. And under this unit, we are aligning ourselves with this key strategic objective, where we say we will be providing incentive programs that promote the broader participation in the mainstream economy by small businesses and cooperatives owned by individuals from historically disadvantaged communities and marginalized regions. So that is our key mandate in this whole unit. We aim to basically develop and come up with incentives that would basically enable us to address this key objective. And our legislative and policies and strategies that we are with is we follow the PFMA, the National Small Business Act, the Cooperative Act, the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act of 2013, the Integrated Small Business Development Strategy, the New Growth Path, the IPAP, National Development Plan, as well as the approved GSBD Strategic Plan. And under the MTF framework, decent employment and through inclusive growth. And core functions of this unit is to implement incentives that support employment creation and national priorities. And secondly, this is a very key thing that we are focused on improving customer satisfaction and very key is the design and implementation of incentives and as well as post-investment support interventions and building a strong organizational capability and key to our success as well as building strategic business linkages that ensure mutually beneficial partnerships. Vision and mission is to administer a set of instruments which are meant to stimulate and facilitate the development of sustainable competitive enterprises through the efficient provision of effective and accessible incentive measures that support national priority, specifically, you know, unemployment, inequality, and poverty. And what sort of instruments do we have under the currently? We have the Black Business Supply Development Program, which I'm going to give you a full background where it's coming from and it's going. We've got the Cooperative Incentive Scheme, the Shared Economic Infrastructural Facility, and then this is the two bottom ones are very new, and the other one is the Youth, Women, and People with Disabilities Business Development Program. So these are the current programs in the current financial year that we will be, you know, administering and focusing on. And I must just take you back where this Black Business Supply Development Program is coming from. The BBSDP, the acronym is BBSDP. It used to be one of the 14 or 13 incentive programs under the DTI, and it was, you know, the bottom end on incentives that the DTI offered, and it was a directorate. And its focus was on you know, supporting a black majority black owned enterprises by providing them an incentive that will enable them to grow their businesses. So the current BBSDP was actually originally the program was introduced in 2002. And from 2002 up till 2009, it was reviewed. In 2010, it was relaunched as a more, you know, a better product following the previous 9 years in existence. And since it's relaunched, its key focus again was still to address that address the constraints that many black-owned enterprises are faced in participating in the mainstream economy. And since it's launched, it has launched on the 1st of September by the then Honorable Minister, Dr. Rob Davies, and its end date, it is expected to be reviewed by the 31st of July 2017. And key, this is an instrument that was designed specifically to be aligned with the PEE policy. And in this current financial year, we have partnered with a university to do a full impact study on its existence. It has never been done before, so we have partnered with a university to do a full review on its impact between 2010 and today before we review it formally on the 31st of July. And the objectives of this program was to fast track the existing SMEs that exhibit good potential for growth into the mainstream economy, to grow black-owned enterprises by fostering linkages between black SMEs, private and public sectors. As you are aware, on our key part of our key objective is to form structured partnership, and this links up with our objectives. And the third, to complement current affirmative procurement and outsourcing initiatives of corporate and public entities to enhance the capacity of grant recipient enterprises to successfully compete for corporate and public sector procurement and outsourcing opportunities. And what is all about this program? The program currently offers eligible enterprises a grant or an incentive. We don't like to use the word grant, an incentive of up to R1 million. And from the incentive, we've broken it down into two. 800,000 of the incentive value can be utilized towards the acquisition of machinery, tools and equipment, and 200,000 can be utilized for business development and training interventions per eligible enterprise. And the cost sharing structure as it is, towards the acquisition of machinery, tools and equipment, the program cost sharing is on a 50-50 basis, and towards enterprise support interventions, we cost share 80% from the department and 20% from the applicant. And who's qualifying for this program? The company should at least be 51% black owned, have a predominantly black management team of 50%. The qualifying turnovers, we're looking at companies with a minimum turnover of 250,000, a maximum of 35 million, and at least the company should be trading for a year. But what the program offers is that if a company doesn't meet either the 250,000 minimum threshold or at least a year trading, we have provision that if the company has a valid contract at the time, it hasn't been operating but it's got a valid contract which will, you know, enable it to meet the above criteria, we will, those type of projects are being supported. And the types of services that companies have to date been able to receive through the program, as an examples are, you know, including quality management systems, patenting, intellectual property rights, production, productivity improvement projects, product improvement projects, triple BEE rating and training, and the type of machinery and equipment that companies have been able to receive. Examples are your TLVs, your CNC machines, grinding machines, bricklaying equipment, IT servers, graders, etc., etc. And with the two interventions, it is non-exhaustive. We don't even have a number of the. It is all inclusive. And this has been the performance of this program since 2011 to date. Overall, in total, 3,368 projects have been approved, and the value of the approvals have been about 1.3 billion rands. And as you can see, the next slide shows us the geographic spread, who has got what in what, and problematic and trouble province has in the Northern Cape, and we've been trying to come up with initiatives that will assist that to get through the Northern Cape. But this is the overall geographic spread of who has gotten, you know, support through the program since 2011, And then this is a breakdown of setups that have been, accessing this program, delivering construction, as well as in terms of the value of project, it has been construction, and as well as the number. So the most projects that we've received to date are majority of them those that have gotten contracts that require graders, TLBs, etc. And the spread is national. I think the leading provinces with regards to this were Limpopo as well as the Eastern Cape are the ones that have majority been able to buy this construction equipment. And what is important as well to elevate is that the program has been able to be accessed by female and youth-owned enterprises. The stats for youth-owned, we couldn't get it properly, but for the female-owned, this has been the performance over years for the number of female-owned enterprises that have been able to access the program. The value has been 121 million rands, and the number of approved projects about 1,154. And this is the spread over the different financial years. And as well, the disbursements, as you can see, the total number, the total value of claims paid over the period, we paid approximately 738 million rands, versus a budget allocation of 550 million rands over the financial years. And if you may ask a question, why is there a difference? We've been able to request environments through previous years to augment, because the demand has always been very high. As a result, before the year ends, we made a submission to request for additional funding. Hence, the amount of money dispersed versus the budget allocation, there is that 249 million environment. And the cumulative approvals versus the disbursement as well is a big gap. As you can see, we've approved projects worth 1.3 billion. However, we've paid projects worth 338 million. And the question will be asked, what about that difference? And that difference is the difference between the two is we've done cancellations, and cancellations were a result of some of our grant beneficiaries are unable to raise at times the 50% contribution that they have to put down. And then in terms of reporting on the jobs, we've kept the register of when an application comes through, how many number of jobs do they have, and then through then we had the monitoring and evaluation department, which would then check if those number of jobs are still in existence. So the total number of jobs that we can support, that we supported over the period under review, it's about 66,000 jobs have been supported. And then this is just about the highlight of the beneficiaries that have received this incentive. This is an example of one of the 3,736 projects that is supported. This one is in Eastern Cape. It's Mentor Guest House. The highlight is that when they applied, they applied for the full signage and the branding for this guest house in Queenstown, and through this support, they've been able to create 4 new permanent jobs from a total of 11 and an additional 4 part-time jobs. And this one is the NK Charters. It's based here in the Western Cape in DNA from Mr. Issa Yabok. They applied to have their boat, their boat to be improved, equipment and engine to be improved. They have the route
they ferry their clients between here to Robben Island, and they are one of our successes, and we gave them an incentive of up to about 528,000 rands. And this one is a project based in Gauteng, the kitchen and the carrot warehouse, as well as we gave them a grant to the value of 821,000 rands. And to date, they've increased their staff from 20 to 28 members, and they're planning to add several new employees. And that turnover as well has leapfrogged. This is another example that we have from Sicily, the five-star car wash, which is a project in Mpolo in Soweto. We've already given them two grants approved them five. The first time when they applied for marketing and signages, and the second time when they applied, they came and applied for equipment. And this is their operation in Soweto, in Mpolo. And that is a summary, a broad overview of the Black Business Applied Development Program. The other program that we have under the incentives unit is the cooperative incentive scheme or program, of which the objective is to improve the ability and the competitiveness of cooperatives by lowering the cost of them doing business, to assist the cooperatives to acquire the startup equipment, to build an initial asset base for emerging cooperatives, to enable them to leverage other support. And the eligibility criteria incorporated and registered in South Africa in terms of the Cooperative Act of 1999, emerging cooperatives with a majority black-owned ownership have projects in any of the different economic sectors, adhere to the cooperative principles, have at least five members, be owned by a historically disadvantaged individual, be rural or semi-based. And the grant at the moment, the qualifying eligible amount is 350,000, and the cost structure at the moment is 100% grant. The maximum that a grant recipient can receive is 350,000, and the eligible minimum that they can apply for is 10,000. And this incentive covers basically, the following: the business development interventions, feasibility studies, market research, production efficiency, technology improvement projects, plant and machinery, startup requirements, working capital. And the working capital, the calculation is ring-fenced at 40%. So to get up stock, this money can be split up to 40%. And then the new incentive for the program is this one. It is work in progress, but it is that. You'll see the back. It's the Shared Economic Infrastructure Facility. This instrument is targeting basically municipalities across the country who wants to create proper facilities for the informal sector, informal traders. We're looking at storage, working, shelters, etc., etc. So what we've done with the program, as you say, is that we've added an element of getting private partnership into the whole mix. So the program is aimed at supporting enterprises by stimulating and encouraging public and or private sector investment through efforts of lowering infrastructural costs. And the program intends to leverage both public and private sector investments that would provide necessary infrastructure by creating an enabling environment for businesses to crowd in investment, mostly in townships, rural areas, and the inner city where business activities are taking place. And the current offering, the program is a 50-50 cost
sharing a grant or incentive made available on a reimbursable basis where BSPD makes a contribution of 50% towards the qualifying infrastructure. The program is kept at a maximum grant of 5 million per qualifying applicant. So any municipality can have multiple different, so it is project based. One municipality can apply for more than one infrastructural support through it. And the other function of the other important functions of the incentive unit is the operation and the stakeholder management function. This is a new function that we created purely to provide strategic and operational support to the incentive unit with regards to facilitation, establishment, maintenance, and growth of strategic partnerships, which are very key for us, and to provide support services to incentive unit on reporting, strategic business planning and knowledge management, government, risk compliance and internal control, to facilitate the dissemination of information on BSPD incentives, as well as provide advisory services to potential and existing clients, and to forge and follow up on all the transversal arrangements and agreements with the different stakeholders. At the moment, there will be an announcement before most end of this month or early next month with regards to the ESCOM holding supply development program. We've been engaged with discussions and talks with them to partner with them for some of these instruments on their quest to develop suppliers who will be their own suppliers. And the Transnet Supplier Development Program, and with regard to CEDA and CIFA, our planning this year will revolve around the two. I'll explain as a key part of the key project with our later slide why they form key. With the previous slides that I've mentioned, we've had a lot of cancellations previously because some of our grant recipients were unable to get or raise the 50% contribution for the BBSDP program that would enable them to access. And so through CIFA, we've already started discussions with them so that we will be able to create that partnership with them. And with CIDA as well, I'm going to touch base on CIDA and Isvan, the Women's Fund. And then within the unit as well, we have a new function called the Product Development Function. This function purpose will be to handle and work closely with the policy sections within the unit and develop and maintain incentive instruments that will be required to enable us to achieve our mandate as well. And what products and programs are we having on the pipelines for this year? The Youth, Women and People with Disability Business Development Program, we are done with the incentive development and design. We should have it being ready in the current quarter of this new financial year. And this program basically will be targeted to youth, people with disabilities, and women, and in its design at the moment, it's looking to provide an incentive of up to 200,000 for female owned and youth owned and or disability owned enterprises. And questions to be asked, an enterprise that graduates from this program will then be eligible to apply for a BBSDP or the CIS, which is a much bigger incentive program. And then the Shared Economic Infrastructural Program, we've already said that we're just doing paperwork, admin to have the guidelines and everything ready still in this quarter. And the new program that we're working at at the moment is the informal upliftment incentive facility. Specifically, this incentive instrument will be targeted to our micro and informal businesses. At the moment, the unit will started with the development of the guidelines, and we're looking at providing grants up to 60,000 per qualifying informal business. So this instrument and the one above, they work hand in hand. If we are able to provide a municipality with and partner with, to build, you know, an economic infrastructure, the informal businesses that will be, you know, given space, they will be able to apply for this grant, which is specifically will be an instrument that will be targeted at getting them, you know, uplifted. And another project that will be busy with is had consultations with the incentives unit. They will be coming up with new amendments on the incentives in the current financial year under the CIS. And we're looking at having that completed before the end of quarter four. And a new program as well that we'll be designing from scratch is the Creative Industries Incentive Program. As well, those are the programs that we'll be working towards in the current financial year. And then the performance of the incentives for the previous financial years, as you can see, with regards to the first one is the VDSDP. In 2011 and 12, when we started, we supported and got in approved 306 projects. The following year, we increased to 1,212. The subsequent year to 1,066. And in the previous financial year, we only managed to approve 783 projects. And as you can see, the current financial year going forward, our numbers have been revised down. And the reason for this decline, the next slide will elaborate the challenges that we have been faced with. And with regards to the women and the youth and people with disabilities, we're looking at the current financial year as we'll be launching a minimum of about 200 women owned enterprises that we will be supporting, as well as about 200 for youth owned enterprises. And the number of cooperatives targeted in the current financial year is 240. The following year, we're looking at increasing to 683 and 822. And with regard to the economic infrastructure facility program, we're looking at supporting approximately a minimum of 5 projects a year and a gradual increment of 5. We try to be conservative with the figures and we've been linking them with the budget allocations that we are having. And this is the financial plan that we have. BBSDP as a program, it has a line item, as the acting DG has mentioned, through treasury. So when the year started this year, we said the allocated budget under BBSDP was 225 million rand. But because we've got new a mandate, we need to support new programs. As a result, National Treasury didn't allocate monies by a budget for women, youth, and the shared economic infrastructure. We've then broken down the BBSDP program to be able to launch these new products as part of the new ministry. And under the breakdown, the programs are as showing here. We've got a cooperative incentive program with a budget of 75 million, which it's got its own line item as well through National Treasury. And we've got the macro franchising project, which is a project that is aiming at developing franchises from the township. It is addressing part of the township strategy that we have under ESBD. And this is the spread of the budget at the current moment. And then the compensation of employees and goods and services, that is the total amount. So the total amount, including transfers and subsidies, it goes to 322 million rands and 153 rands. And then the challenge is that the incentive unit is faced with is non-performance of suppliers. Part of the cancellations are suppliers being not being able to perform, and the applicants and stakeholders defrauding the SBD by submitting false information on applications and claims, and non-performance by applicants, and then the slow uptake for the newly launched SIB and the Youth and Women Business Development Program. And then the current staff complement, this is the current staff for the two units, the cooperatives and BDFDP, is sitting at around 43 people, and we envisage that we will put motivations to get additional staff because of the work that the unit is faced with. And key challenges from the unit, the average turnaround times in processing both applications and claims, that has been a challenge for us, and that has been a challenge that we've as well been trying to come up with ways of really improving it. And the other part is that our entire claims process is completely manual. There's no IT support for it, and we've got deliverable inspections can only be done once a month for economic reasons, and not just when claims are ready. And then the major one has been always the budgetary constraints. The number of applications that we receive at any given time exceeds what our budget allocation is. And those are the major key challenges that we've been faced with. So as a result, key projects in the current financial year that we need to work hard at, and that will enable us to address some or most of the challenges that we have. I've already mentioned the informal business improvement scheme. We will be working hard towards getting this incentive ready. In the second quarter, we should be having an incentive that is going to specifically address the informal sector economy. At the moment, we have partnered with the wholesale and retail sector. There's a pilot of 1,000 projects that we are piloting through the wholesale and retail sector for the informal sector. But our plan is to come up with a formal incentive that we will administer, and that will specifically talk to the informal sector. And the youth and cooperative projects, we've got a number of youth and cooperative projects on the pipeline that we will be looking at assisting in the current financial year. There's an installation of solar panels in Eastern Cape that is currently available that we'll be looking into supporting. We as well have the National Youth Venture Capital Support Program, which we'll be working with the Youth Directorate to offset and kickstart. And as a delivery model for the current financial year, we are looking at formalizing and finalizing an arrangement with CEDA to get both the Cooperative Incentive Program and the Youth and Women Business Development Programs to be not administered but to be accessed through a CEDA. So we are working on, we will be starting in our next reporting, we'll share with you what CEDA will do, but the intention is to get CIS and this other program being accessed through CEDA. And then another important one that will assist us a lot. From DTI, we inherited a system, an IT system that has been working in progress for years. For the past 2 years, 3 years, they've been developing a system that will unlock and improve our overall operational efficiencies. As we speak, we've migrated part of the system, it is called an IDMS, Integrated Information Management System. So we started discussion internally with the person who's going to assist us with IT requirements to really assist us to complete the full load. We have been unable to get the things part online, and hence some of our delays have been that we've been doing things manually. And then the other important project is the one that we've mentioned on the other side, the macro franchise project, where we, for this year, we're targeting at assisting 5 projects to be franchised into a project that we will be able to support in the townships and previously disadvantaged areas. And with regards to Isivande and FIDA, we've started gestural discussions with Isivande. As you are aware, the new program that will be launching, the youth and the women program, will be on a cost-sharing basis. It won't be a 100% grant, it's an 80-20% grant. And what we've already mentioned to Isivande, as well as the FIFA, is for us to create a one-stop shop. If a person is eligible to receive a grant, we will then assist them to get, you know, partially, you know, the loan. It will depend what they will be applying for. So that is the key strategic partnership that we're going to have with our key agencies. And in summary, that is the summary of the whole presentation.
Thank you, Chair and other members. I just want to talk for 1 minute on the organizational resources. This is one of the units where we suffered in terms of people not being willing to migrate to the department. The chief director ate with DTI. The other director has gone back to DTI. So we only have one director and the number of people below the director. Here we are not complaining, but we believe that we can work a little bit smarter by utilizing FIDA and SPIFA infrastructure, because most of the people who were working in this unit were doing the pre-investment, the due diligence, the post-investment. So now we believe those functions should move to FIDA and SPIFA because they are already there in the regions. There is no need to have so many people, and we are going to move some of these people to youth program as well as the informal business program, because we believe that those are the programs that are going to assist the department to make an impact. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. It's
Honorable Cook, followed by Honorable November, Honorable Chan, Honorable Nashua, Honorable Ramaphosa, Honorable Mabasa, and Honorable Beko.
Thank you, ma'am. Chair. Yeah, it's one of those units that when you listen to them, you wonder why are they under CIFA. But I mean, that's a strategy that can follow later. I did have a few questions, Chair. The one is about the impact study that's going to be done by the university. My first question is, do we know of any success stories since September 2010? And how much is this impact study going to cost the unit? And then I also need to know the training. One of the competencies is training, and I would like to know how much have they spent on training since September 2010. And Jay, then on page 17, we talk about job supported.
But I think the question is how many jobs were created. It's important that we know how many extra jobs was created per land spent by this unit. And Chief, I also like to know the strategy of the unit to monitor the businesses that and how successful they are after the intervention. If they have some such strategy, I would like to know how many of those businesses succeeded and become actually gazelle businesses after the intervention, and how many employees are still working in that organization. Informal business upliftment, my question is, will municipalities be able to tap into this fund? In other words, will municipalities be able to apply on behalf of a group of informal settlements who want, say, a structure at the area in a municipality? So that's the question. And then the last question is staff complement. I would just like to know what is the staff complement, what is the cost to the company of the staff complement. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. One has appreciated, and a lot of work has been done to put this together for us. But Chairperson, the question on the university has been asked, but my question was that, are we sure now which university are we going to use? The second question is on the objectives. I'm not sure of outsourcing. Maybe you have to explain to me the way outsourcing, it feels like you're giving up something that you have. The last bullet says to enhance the capacity of grant recipients. Maybe I don't read it right. It's the last bullet on objective. But in public sector, chairman, and outsourcing opportunities. Opportunities that we outsourcing. Okay. So the other question is on page 11, on qualifying criteria. The next bullet, predominantly black owned, if you want to say. Now my question is, are we sure? Because we've seen a lot of companies that are fed or are meant to be black companies and to be black owned at that price. The names I used, I remember one was Emmy Mbe. When we had Emmy Mbe, it was really what the name was just used. In Kaifa, we also had a project that was meant for black people. It was only two black young people that were there, that were not knowing what they are doing. They are three people now, but they are the big shots. Are we sure, or do we, before this, at least alert our people of sort of giving some training or equip them to say that you have to be alert to this? Because the strategic partners tend to be the bosses at the end of the day, and they run away without ever hearing. The other question is on page 14. Oh, it's on page 17. On the application slide. This one is it. It's for the National Officers Office, it's for the provinces also.
Page?
It's 17. The question is, does this application, the people are applying to, is it via the provinces, or is it going straight to the National Office?
Okay.
because it can take really a long time when it's gonna buy the product. And I think my last question has been asked. It's the one on vacancies. I'm sure that the vacancies is at the national level. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member, Honorable Charles.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Quite a few of my questions are covered by Robert Kruger, Honourable November, but thank you very much for the presentation. A couple of starting points. Acting DG, I'd like to just get your take on the on reasons for the reluctance of DGI staff to move. Is it because their terms of employment are changing? Is it because their salary levels are changing? Is it because they feel the department is unstable? Or what is it? Because obviously this has a capacity implication. It means that you're, maybe that's one of the reasons why you're dip, or seeing a dip in the current financial year in the number of grants processed. Virtually only two-thirds this year compared to last year, which is a major concern. Which is compounded by the fact that you have a manual system, which is quite extraordinary in my view. I know that Astrid Lubin was facing big challenges at the CBIC in trying to introduce an IT system. And it could arguably be the cause of her departure in the end, depending on who's, you know, the story you believe. You know, but you know, union resistance notwithstanding, in this day and age, we surely need to have systems. One of the reasons we need that is not just improved processing speed and efficiency and accuracy, but also data analysis. And, you know, if you had had this, I would have thought that the impact study would A, be possibly even redundant, and B, if you are going to do it, conduct it much more efficiently and quickly if you have the data. So I really do, you know, want to hear what steps are being taken on getting that IT system up and running. Who's actually developing it? You know, what company is it? Kojima, for example? Who is it? You know, because there's been some big startups in IT systems in recent years. I'd like to know who's actually running the system, who's developing the system. Secondly, I want to just question the strategy and the underlying thinking behind the grant versus loan approach, which then calls into question the use of public funds. You know, we are using public funds here, taxpayers' money, and I think it's incumbent upon government as a whole to give answers to the taxpayers as to the efficacy of different, let me call it, disbursement mechanisms, whether they be grants or loans. And the only way of doing this is to get proper impact studies, and you know, this goes back to my earlier question, but surely you will be able to give some indication of the return on this investment, if I may call this investment. And I come back to the point that I made in earlier committee meetings, that the way in which one needs to assess this is not just in jobs created, as my colleague here points out, but in turnover, profit, and tax. Now, I know you give some anecdotal example of turnover, fine, but do you have that aggregated? What is the multiplier effect of your grants? It's a very simple economic term. What are the multiplier effect of these? Are we seeing a massive acceleration of impact? That then relates to where is the greatest impact felt? Is it the grants of 50,000, 500,000, 10 million? Is there a disproportionate impact felt, you know, in different recipients, different beneficiaries, depending upon the size of the grant? This type of information is critically important. And not just in this department, across all departments, the jobs funds, you know, all the other incentives things from DTI. We've got to understand this to be more intelligently using taxpayer money. So I would be very interested to see the terms of reference of the impact study. I would like to have some input into that. I think the committee needs to have some input into the terms of reference of the impact study. We need to know that the right questions are being asked Because if the right questions are not being asked, we're not going to get the right answers. The failure rate of beneficiaries. Okay, you said the cancellation rate, that's one thing, but the failure rate is another. Comes back to impact. You know, how many of the beneficiaries that you're giving money to are not using the money effectively or in the way in which they promised to use it? Now, the other thing is, you talk about incentives, but I don't see any incentives here. They're just grants. Where's the incentive? An incentive gives reward. The only reward that I see will come from the efforts of the beneficiaries themselves. There's no incentive. Tax breaks, other things that will give reward on the performance, on the achievement of performance. So I'd like your comment on that. And the extent to which you are in touch, for example, with Treasury, about giving further incentive, for example, another grant. You know, if you achieve this, then you will achieve, you know, you will get by. Because in that way, you know, you're following the natural instincts of an entrepreneur, is to chase reward. So I'd like your comment on that, please. I'd like also to know if you've identified these five micro-franchising projects, and could you please explain to us what they are? Because 2 million rand doesn't seem a lot of money to be dishing out to five franchising micro, even though they're micro. I'd like to know what those are. And then it also concerns me to see, in terms of your performance metrics, risks, challenges, on page 32, that in columns under impact, the likelihood is high, 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 high. That's scary. You know what I mean? It's big, big scary, that is. I mean, if I were a fund manager and I would look at this, I'd think twice about fishing out money. So what are you doing to mitigate that risk? Is it the selection criteria? What is it? Support, and, you know, again, this comes back to the point that I made last week in the committee, which is the linking of support, non-financial and financial support, to me, is absolutely critical. You know, you reduce the risk of that money go down the drain if you provide support alongside it. And hopefully then reduce that risk at least to medium, you know, in the short term, and then gradually to low. I know we're dealing with a high-risk environment. There's no question about that. But, you know, again, it's important that the taxpayer understands that they're not just throwing money down the drain. And I can see from your case studies that there are good examples of where they're not. But we're just dealing with a few anecdotal examples out of a couple of thousands. You know, we need to see the results on aggregate level. Thank you, Chair.
Can I ask four short questions? Some have been taken covered by my colleagues. But my first one is linked to what the Honorable just said about incentives. Because I had here the question, how do you define incentive? Because what we see here is just grants. So I'm interested in knowing your definition of incentive. The second one, BPSDP approved 3,368 applications. Now, of this 3,368, what percentage would you say was money successful? What is the successful percentage of the amount? And the next one, BSDP was relaunched in 2010. Now, I want to know why this impact study was not done earlier, because according to the document, it is going to start in the current financial year. Now, when exactly is it going to start, and why was it not done earlier? Because we had about 5 years already after the launch, the relaunch. And the last one, regular inspections cannot be done to ensure that they are deliverables. And we are told that the reason is economic reasons. Now, if I look at the staff complement, the organizational resources, and conclude that you seem to be top heavy. Would you not agree? And if not, why not? Because some of the resources that are going towards the salaries for all these directors, chief directors and directors, could be used, I think, more profitably for ensuring that are regular inspections to make sure that the money that is given is well spent. One does not want to see what this unit is doing as just dishing out money without insisting on returns. So why are regular inspections not done? You say it's because of financial reason, but I'm asking, do you really need this many directors? Would not one director and assistant be enough to do the job? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, also welcome representation with at least a very, very full information. It's a great thing to have this kind of information to talk on. Now my question, the first one is on the training and monitoring. Or training, let me speak to training and then mentoring. Who conducts the training? Who's doing the training? How do you do it? Who and how? How do you do training? Who conducts training? Now, two, I'll tell you this one. This one I'm asking on the basis of the reliability of the information that you have given to us. In the unit itself now, I would want to check at least qualifications of officials you always employ in the unit to deal with this specific job and business. So that we have a picture of who are the people, fit to handle this kind of a unit that is so serious. And coupled with that is the research unit. Where is your research unit in your organogram? Is your research unit, because that is a very key aspect of the unit. Now, this one, I think it will want to talk to the legacy report. Well, this is for interest sake. I would want to know, from your previous reports on how you were able to contain and do other operations from the day you were launched so far. So I think that the report can be in a position to get that. Give a picture of how do you graduate your people? How do you say this one is now qualifying? It might be taken up. It is after how long? So I think that kind of a report, if it is there, I think I would also want to request for such a report. Well, even if it's not today, this one is to actually assist when we move now after today's meeting and in future, so that we actually also empower ourselves around the knowledge within the unit itself. The last one, Chair, it is around the value edge. I think you might be in a position to give us a value added in the general product economic growth. See, because people have been asking about jobs and so on. That will entail that now to say, because of this jobs, we will be able to know that poverty was reduced at this level. You are able as officials sometimes to give us the ask on how the things are going. So I think I'm interested in knowing that. But specifically now in this one, I would want to see the section of the skills. How have you helped the question of skills transfer, skills, empowering people, capacitating people, skills development and so on, because that is where we want to go now with that kind of a business and grant. we would actually want to see is killing the people, not actually the bulk of the funds going to business itself, running business, buying material. But skilling is very fundamental to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the chair. The ICE mission has been covered by the Honorable Sparks. Page 17. Is it that it's one state there on the graph where it says 11 or 15? Or was it meant to be 11?
Thank you, Chair. And just need to thank you for the presentation. I think all the questions that have been asked, but I've got one question related to the programs and the services that is in supposed to go to the relevant people. Ours is to make sure that all the programs and the services go to the relevant people. So I just want to know, in your presentation you said that you will be working with municipalities. Have you done your proper study of the municipalities in terms of programs going to the people? Because the people that need the services are the people on the ground. As Honorable Mabasa mentioned that, how about the rural areas? So
I just want you to be very specific on the success stories so that we can measure you in terms of how do you deal with the rural areas of the disadvantaged people. Thank you very much.
You can now respond.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll start with the issue of the question from Honorable Bergwa. We are trying to change the way these things have been done, the programs have been delivered to our business people. One of the strategies that we are working on is the co-location. We want to make it realistic because the challenge is our agencies, they've been saying they are doing co-location, but it was more about occupying the same building. There was no linkages in terms of their programs. So we've done a concept on co-location. There is a steering committee that is a team on that, which is set by the ATTG, including both FIFA and VIDA. We have SARS coming on board because we want to make sure that when people go to these institutions to get services, they get a whole package rather than just going for one and then being referred to another structure somewhere else. So the co-location includes both our branches as well as municipalities where we don't have branches. So we are really trying to change and make sure that services, you know, are accessible to our SMEs and cooperatives. So that's the way we are going to drive this. Even KZN have offered that they can co-locate with us in all their district municipalities through their LED agencies. So we are really trying to cooperate and make sure that access to these services, people get it from municipalities. So that they can be closer to the people. And then on the question that was raised by Honorable Chance, on the reasons why some people are not willing to come over, it also talks to the issue of the resources, so I'll answer those questions now. The chief director did not move at all. I guess maybe this was fear of change. People don't want to change. He was more comfortable working for the DTI. And then on the director, he moved. I guess we are asking different questions because the challenges were there at the DTI. We're not talking about impact. We're mostly talking about registration of cooperatives, for example. So people were just there, comfortable doing things that way. So when we changed the program and then started to ask questions because we pushed to think differently, people I think started getting uncomfortable, and I think they found their way back to the department. So I think it's more the fear of change and not what... Yeah, so it was that issue. Most people will not come and tell you that I don't want to do what you want me to do. They will just say there is an opportunity back at the DTI, and we say no, with our blessings we can go so that we can get people that we can work with. So it's more about trying to get the right people, you know, working in the department because we can't operate the way we operated in the DTI times. And then on the question of resources, what we are trying to push there, I think Honorable Muta asked the question about the structure, why are we not utilizing those people to assist with the posting pre and post investment. We found that people spend a lot of time traveling to these areas, whereas we have CIDA and CIFA branches who can do the same job quicker. And they even have a better understanding of the environment where they are. So you'll find that you'll get more credible information from a person who's based in a certain area, like let's say in Kwapa, rather than having someone from the department driving all the way from Pretoria to Kwapa just to access. The person might not get full information because people are very smart and they are able to stage. When they know that you are coming, they will bring you equipment and everything and pretend that they are operating. So what we are saying there, we're saying CIDA and CIFA branches, they must assist us to do due diligence
do pre-investment and post-investment so that they can even monitor after we've undertaken those interventions in particular areas. They even have intelligence that can assist us in terms of guiding our efforts in those areas. That these are the sectors maybe that you can concentrate on, get about this sector, they are not working in this region. So we are saying those people who are there in the structure, they are going to be moved around to those areas where there is the greatest need. For example, I mentioned the issue of the informal businesses and youth. Those are critical programs for us. So we are going to take most of those people at a lower level in particular to come and assist in these other programs, because we know that we're operating under very strenuous conditions. We don't have resources. National Treasury, they keep on reminding us that we must do more with what we have. So we are looking at redeploying these individuals to assist so that we utilize and see for more effectively. I think, Hula, I think you'll answer the other question.
What I think DG said does not really satisfy, because in the document we are given as economic reason, as the reason why inspections are done. Now, if there were talks with the CEDA and CIFA to help, I mean, that also could have been brought in the document. But now this brings the responsibility on the DSB, on this unit, to do the inspections. It does not refer to help being required from this other CEDA and CIFA, for example. So I would want to know why they're carrying this responsibility and that the document does not show what the acting DG just said.
It's okay. I would want to add on the issue of CEDA doing the work. The offices of this in the provinces or in districts. My advantage is that I have been a deputy mayor in one of the presidential poverty notes, district in the city. And I was responsible for planning, infrastructure, development, and economic development. So the development forum, integrated development forum, was chaired by me. The planning forum was chaired by me. The LED strategy committee was chaired by me. And the infrastructure development committee was chaired by me. CEDA, the question that I want to ask, CEDA was part of those structures. And I said, for 3 full years. And then I would come to those meetings. And because I was chairing, I was the chairperson of local economic development. We were working directly with CEDA. And one of the tasks that was given to me by the mayor was to ensure that cooperatives that appeared in the register of CIFO that belonged to UGU did not only appear and they were not functional and viable. And we put in CIFO data to assist us, as well as the provincial department of economic development and tourism. CEDA would outsource services, meaning that the person, the warm body in CEDA comes to the meeting, understands what the need is, goes to the office, looks at the database of the providers, and appointed the service provider. So, is it SIDA that is doing, my question is it SIDA that is doing the work? Or SIDA is outsourcing on behalf of the department, meaning that the department gives SIDA a responsibility, and is SIDA outsourcing? And I'm saying this because I come from a community development background, where the resources that are in abundance. I was working for Welfare Spray Fellowship Center under a program called SHADE, and SHADE stands for Self-Help Associates for Developed Economies. Above me was a director. There was an executive director and a provincial coordinator. I was then the field worker under the provincial coordinator. I was the field worker responsible for the establishment of self-help income generation projects, which were cooperatives and SMEs. Small businesses, street vendors. That was my client base. Okay. And I was doing training, needs assessment, developing the training program, and going out to train one person. When they reach the stage of marketing, I would also do the market research, package the marketing mix, identify the suppliers, and then pass that information to the person who is now managing the cooperative. And I'm talking about the cooperative that was producing school uniforms, source materials to produce school uniforms, and supplying school uniforms. Question that I'm asking, does SIDA provide services or SIDA outsourcing services? Because many experience and I, from UBU perspective, is that SIDA doesn't provide them services via outsourcer now.
Honorable Chair, before I come to just to respond to Honorable Muswe, on the last, towards the end of the presentation, we did mention the fact that we'll be looking at the issue of strategic partnerships. That is the slide that talks to the question of utilizing SIDA and SIFA branches to assist us with the pre-investment and post-investment strategy that we are going to utilize. But I'll admit that, as Chairperson was saying, SIDA and SIFA, SIDA mostly, they do outsource their services. And I think it will be important, the person who chairs the co-location steering committee that is working on the concept, to come and present to the portfolio committee the strategy so that we can get inputs in terms of how we're going to move forward. But it also pushes us to relook at the strategy of SIDA and the way they're offering the services, because it looks like the kind of people that they need to get is more people who are development oriented, because what they were telling us last time is that they train people and then these banks and other institutions will come and take those people who are business advisors. So that's why they are always undercapacitated in terms of having people who are driving their programs in their ranges. So I think the solution is to come and have a thorough discussion with the portfolio committee and receive input together with SIDA. So it won't be just us as a department. We need to bring SIDA and SIFA so that we can look at their thinking and the approach that we need to do or to embark on going forward, because SIDA is a challenge. We're all aware that really they are outsourcing. Maybe that's why the budget also needs to be thoroughly looked at.
Can I make a follow-up? They are also not outsourcing to organizations that have got a capacity. There are NGOs in the survivors, progressive ones. that the girls have got a loss of temper, the Dagonia, the Colonia, all those organizations that were actually providing services in the community when there was apartheid government that was neglecting communities. Those organizations today are not supported. Instead, consultants that are profit-driven are the ones that are getting jobs. People that have got experience, I always tell you that I have not been to a university. I am a product of an NGO that provided thorough training in community development and gave me all the skills. That is why I'm able to interrogate and communicate at a level in some situations that is apart from a person who has a junior degree. But because in the minds of the people, it is a money-making scheme. It's easy to get money from government. Everybody has become a consultant. Why would sit up for government, a consultant for government, those that are performing very badly within the private sector, those that would not be charged by the private sector to be consultants, are consultants in government. Some of them are former employees of government who resigned to become consultants. The question I'm asking, what oversight is given by the department over its entities, CISA, to ensure that CISA's capacity is built so that CISA does not outsource? But while the capacity is not there, CISA uses experienced people that are there in the community. I can count a number of them that I was trained to. And some of them who trained me. You know, I am a product of Griffith Zabala. I'm a product of Israel Mkavel. I was trained by Griffith Zabala, I was trained by Israel Mkavel. They are both alive. Why are we not utilizing people that understand development, even to develop a capacity within the department, because none of you were involved in development work when the apartheid government was not focusing on development. None of you were there. And there is not a single staff member that has undergone a community development or an official. Now, there are many causes of public administration and all those things, but the NDP is not talking about public administration. The NDP is talking about community development. So, the question is, what oversight is provided by the department over its entity to ensure that even those services that are outsourced are of value? There is value for money. You say, man, I'm wondering whether it is mad. Because it's a skill. If I were to assume that because of my age and because I know how the hair looks, the hair looks like when they are done, and I know which there are certain products that I see in a shop like Abo Cliff for hair, in a very intense Lauma put up lensing when it's very right, it's a skill. I don't undermine a person who is trained in doing hair, because it's something that I cannot do. I'm not going to even look later, isn't it? A skill that can be done by a person who has not seen a shiva. It's a unique skill. Why is community development underlooked? And what oversight are you providing? Anyone today is a consultant. And that training provided is only a training that explains the earth. If it is for cooperatives, it just explains the earth.
What does the act say? Ends there.
No, that's a very difficult question, Chairperson. But I think it details. No, but Chairperson, I think it helps us to think differently in the way we are conducting oversight. I think it will be more robust in terms of even going deeper into, so we'll not be counting enterprises saboteurs, we'll be counting even the type of service that has been provided by FIDA, as well as CIFA into our cooperative and SMMEs. I think it's something that we is helping us to shape up our oversight rather than looking at the quarterly reports and looking at the numbers. We also commit to share the terms of references for the impact that is going to be done so that we can solicit inputs from the portfolio committee members, because they've asked some questions that the impact study should ask the right questions, as well. It can't be just about ticking the box in terms of counting numbers. Thank you.
What informed the initiative to undertake an impact study? Is it because had the department already gone a certain journey, and then he said beyond this journey, we need the external study to be undertaken? You know, just I want to assess what informed.
Honorable Mr. Mabasa, what informed the impact study was that we couldn't do it formally so under DTI because we had monitoring and evaluation unit which monitored and evaluated all the programs including VDSDP and CIS. So as a result, from the unit's perspective, they had limitations as well, inherently not to perform impact studies for all the programs. So the timing and the movement into the new ministry came in, maybe to answer the question of the who's going to do that, it's the University of Stellenbosch. There is a student who's doing his PhD who approached us last year to find this one thing that we have been planning to do so long, and he will be doing his PhD studies focusing on both programs. So there are no cost implications, and he will be conducting the study over the 2 years. It came, and to answer as well questions related to monitoring and evaluation, under the Department of Trade and Industry, there was a dedicated to directorate that specifically did monitoring and evaluation, and there are reports that have been presented over the past 3 years that have evaluated all the programs, including the current two programs that we have under DSBT. So those reports would be prepared and shared amongst with they will be sent to the portfolio committee meeting as background information on the performance overall of the schemes. And maybe before Honorable Reverend Mishwe, that question there, basically what we're saying that due to the nature of the programs are nationally, and as and when claims come, we have to take someone out to go and inspect the respective claim and view if the client has received what they have applied for. Therefore, because of that, there's no project that we have been inspected. We've inspected all projects, but because of economic reasons, we would lump applications from Bloemfontein, wait maybe for 2 weeks, and then deploy a person to go and inspect those at once. So, and as as a result, the impact is that if you submit a claim, we can immediately go and send someone to do the full due diligence. So to manage the visits, we know we approve applications throughout, and then we'll just lump them. Once a month we go, we inspect everything that has come through. There's no project that we haven't inspected. It's just the timing. We lump them. When a person goes and we deploy, they go and view a number of projects at the same time. Hence that bullet point. And then I'll start from the first question from Mr. Honorable Mr. Kruger on the success stories. Yes, we've mentioned the monitoring and evaluation unit as a directorate. Our focus was mainly on administering the program and the program is showing that we receive application, we get them to committee, they are approved, and then we had support structure in a form of monitoring evaluation that then did all those functions. They assisted us with doing success stories, the reporting, and the analysis. So in the new ministry, as we have migrated, we've put that as something that we will work at getting, you know, having a limited support. So we have success stories that have already been generated through the monitoring and evaluation unit. There are reports that will be shared with the portfolio committee and members. And with regards to municipalities and partnerships, the SIF program, the Shared Economic Infrastructural Program's key target market is the municipalities. In any form, if a municipality can get a private funding, or if informal businesses can group themselves together and put money available to assist that municipality and apply, we will be assisting them. So the key will be the municipalities with regards to that specific program. And with regards to cost to company analysis, that information we will share with at the moment we don't have, and with regards to the monitoring and evaluation report that were done before, we'll go through and provide the information to the committee. And the University of Stellenbosch will be the one, Honorable November, is the one that will be conducting a study. There's a PhD graduate who will be doing the study full, and he's been given the permission to do so. With finalizing the terms of reference, as the acting DG has said, we will circulate the terms of reference and share that with the portfolio committee. And with regards to funding, we've been working handy with the simple VEE unit within the DTI. They have the capacity to check vetting, and due to some limitations as well with our systems and how we verify and vet had certain limitations. As we left the DTI this side, there was a process whereby major government organs are having this big project linking human settlements, not human, the one with IDs, the Home Affairs, SARS, CIPC. There is a project that is being done to integrate government organs to do full vetting. We've got limitations in terms of full vetting. We rely on source documents and we rely on visits. And as and when we get a call, then we will then send it through to the BEE unit to do further check. But the source documentation that we receive when people send applications are the ones that we use to verify if they are okay, and we do site visits to all the projects. And based on that information, we will then proceed and process an application. And with regard to vacancies,
We were working on vacancies. We should have some of the, we've got about two vacancies at the moment within the unit that will be filling up. On our slide there, we wanted to propose, we're going to do a business case to propose for additional personnel to enable us to do more. And then honorable chance, the IT system shortfall, it's something that we've put it in on the system, and we've got a resource currently within the unit who has been, who's overseeing all our IT requirements. We've already had one or two meetings with them, and it will be something that we will look into it and getting the budget as well for it. And regarding the grants and the loans, the grants and the loans approach, the purpose of the grants, the view has always been that the cost of doing business is where the grants fit in. If you were to be given a contract and you would require to buy equipment worth R1 million, for us to further support you to provide you a grant, it will lessen the cost for you to do a business by, you know, whatever grant amount that we would have provided you with, and that in itself will try to push you to grow your business. The rationale has just been to improve on the gearing that you will be utilizing. And the grant versus the incentive, maybe the English, in context, what we are saying, we know that our country is, when a person mentions a grant, you talk of something, so it's something that we'll correct. It's just a grammar. We'll just put it properly as an incentive, but the thinking was that we don't want to, put people and think that, hey, I want that grant. That was just a matter of English, and but in our thinking was that we're saying yeah, it is a grant, correct, yeah, so that is true. And
I want to get into that. Development of SMMG doesn't happen in a space, take place in a particular area. Okay. And we have what is called integrated development and intergovernmental relations framework. That is what guides us. Now, when you develop an SMME and a cooperative, you develop a person that lives in a particular area, and you are working then with a municipality, because this president is a municipality. Then, an incentive is something that can come through an integrated development approach practice, where you would look at all structures of government and then say, what will enhance this development process of this particular group, not just an individual. I'm still coming to that. Your funding model is targeting individuals. It is not linked to development of communities.
Correct.
It also doesn't prioritize underdeveloped areas. That's why you are not seeing results. You don't see the results. Now, an incentive will come either in a form of a tax rebate for having invested, or a municipality saying, we are attracting
investors at development of small businesses. And if that the municipality is working with the department, they put it at that time, small business now, they would sit and plan on what would encourage local people that are in Ugu to start their own businesses. Because the benefit for Ugu is that it has got six local municipalities under it. And those six municipalities would continue to provide free services for as long as small business is not developing. Communities are not becoming economically active. So there is a benefit for Umasipala not to charge amare to a small business. Because Umasipala wants to develop this to a level where they can pay and afford to pay for AMA services. So during the initial stage, Lomdwana, Utase Street, this child has been born, she can't sit, we are born. This child, Utaya Shana, can sit. This child can now stand. This child can now walk. This child can now run. A withdrawal with my spana. I'm an incentive. Another municipality would attract the investment to go to end. We will not charge, we will reduce our rate for our small businesses and in part of our established businesses. That is an incentive. So an incentive, you don't have to look at you only as a department, but you have to look at you as a department as part of a government that has got other departments that provide other services as well as other spheres of government. What role will be played by a local municipality in order for small businesses and cooperatives to mushroom in this area? We will go to a local municipality and ask them to reduce rates. That is an incentive. We will also go to SARS and ask SARS to give tax rebates for people who receive money from road accident funds for accident, big money. This person is no longer going to work, but to call it money is good. To encourage those people that can receive the money from the government, from another Russian government, to invest and establish businesses. That is what to do in a developmental approach. So that is the difference between a grant and the incentive. A grant is what retards the progress because the information is not meaningful. Instead of providing a grant, you provide a revolving loan fund. You make those people responsible. You say we give this, but we also teach you and organize you to manage it for yourself so that those that are not paying will know what the next group will not be able to get. That is the community development approach. As they enula, your speaker, you give them grants and will come for grants forever and ever. So I just wanted to give you a lesson. It's not a question. I am giving you part of my knowledge of how to organize e-development and establish our small businesses and our cooperatives using a community development approach. And your fertile ground for doing that is the software. Yeah. Because the software is already doing that instead of a consultant.
Chairperson, I have to apologize because I have to go back to cabinet, but before I leave, I think you can now get the sense of the kind of work that we still have to do in really having a full department which, upon recognition of the weaknesses of the system of having just units under trade and industry as well as economic development, these are the results. And the results, clearly you can see them through all the things that you've been saying, all the things that Mr. Chand and everybody else has been saying, that it's been a terrible weakness in the system that loses sight of the fact that it's about the developmental state, first and foremost. It's about empowering the community, secondly. Thirdly, it's about not dishing out money. Because one of the things that really made me demand that we go back and get reports, and then you get others deciding, no, they don't want to be here, is simply because change is very difficult. And when you have to change, it means you need to be harsh, you need to be rough, you need to be everything, but you've also got to be educational at the same time. So all I'm saying as I leave is that I would like yourselves as members also to understand the challenges that we are facing without necessarily running away from responsibility, because we are the executive, we have to be accountable, we have to make sure that these things do happen. But I do want to say to you, because this is the last, I think this is the last meeting before you finalize your report and everything, to say to you, we have heard you, and we heard you from day one. Because remember that from the time that we started with the portfolio committee, we did say to yourselves, being a new committee, being a new department, we'll do things differently than usual. We're going to come try and be as close as we possibly can to the portfolio committee, and even sometimes join your visits to the communities, because we're trying to understand this space that we are finding ourselves in order to change the way things have been done. Because if we continue to do things in the old way, and I've made this example to yourselves, for instance, how do you get somebody calling you and saying, hey, Minister, I was needing 2 million rand, it's a loan, and I can't give back this money, can you write it off? I mean, it's a shock that somebody can even think of sitting somewhere and thinking there was a loan of 2 million, and now what they want is that money to be written off. You write it off, but what was the agreement when you signed that this is a loan that you have been given, you have to pay it back? And then there's an understanding also on the other hand of the political space we're in, that again, many of our people never had the opportunity. So when they see this money, they think this is an opportunity. But the responsibility is about us ensuring that when that money is being given, there is a necessary training, the necessary understanding. There's all the things which I found that in some of the departments, they were trying those units that were there, but they didn't have the necessary margin and the necessary capacity to be able to do that. That's why if you look at the structure of this presentation that's been made today, under normal circumstances, he shouldn't be here doing this report, but the people that are supposed to be here, they decided not to. Now we're going back to DGI. And as far as I'm concerned, for those who feel that it's better for them to go back there, I'm comfortable with that, because I need a lean machine that's going to be able to deliver on the mandate. Thank you, Chair. Sorry for taking long.
Before you go, Minister, I want to make to speak on three things. The first one is that you said it to agenda based as opposed to being informed by the stage of development of the business. A child that is an infant that's by eating solid. Doesn't start by eating solid. It does not matter whether it is a boy child or a girl child. What matters is how old is the child and what support needs to be given. What is it that this child needs in order to grow? Business, when you think of business and community development, think of a baby. You will then be able to design your services and products that you are going to offer informed by that.
but you also think of where this child is, which will then be informed by the geographical location. What is it that we shall design for rural business people, for cooperatives that are in rural areas? Because their needs are different from the needs of cooperatives and small businesses that are in town. Their needs are different from cooperatives and small businesses that are in township. And the needs of small businesses that are in the informal settlement are different. So, you can then have a master business that are designed on the basis of whether you are a youth or you are a woman or you are a man. A business day business, no longer the woman, we in daughter, no woman to father, no woman. What affects the business? Our conditions operate as one, which is why the geographical location becomes important. Secondly, it is the stage of development. So, Kate is not here because I wanted them to retrieve a slide presented to us as this committee by the department, the pyramid, as well as the pyramid that was presented to us by the Small Business Development Institute. There are similarities in those pyramids. At the bottom, you have what is called survivalist. Now, I am looking at your slide number 11. The starting point is 250,000 to 35 million. And it is targeting a person that has been operating for a year. I reflect and look at the slide that is presented by ISIFAM. That is talking about funding two cooperatives to establish textile cooperatives. And allocation is 3 million. What I get into when I look at those two presentations is that you don't understand your target market. You also don't understand, you have not specified as to who is serviced by the small business and who is serviced by DTI. And who is serviced by which program under the small business. I go to the stand, the human settlement. I pick up my documents, I find a rural housing loan, which is designed for rural communities. The rural housing loan is even talking about they can borrow in order to have high water in their houses. It's based on the need. Because the government is only providing rural communities with stand water, the communal stand water pipe. It becomes the responsibility of a household to call that water as the water needs the energy. Then human settlement designs an intervention with it. For rural communities, we will then give a loan. We are about to go rise with it. And how this loan is managed. Human settlement is part of a government. The same question that was asked before, which is, to what extent do you communicate with other departments? But that question is not even supposed to be asked because you don't interact with your own agency. You come to us with a threat plan that has not been discussed under one roof. It will then become very difficult for you to think that there is something that you can do with the Department of Human Settlement or something that you can do with the Department of Social, something that you can learn from them. So, the point that I'm coming to is that we would rather spend more time analyzing the situation and planning than jumping and changing our programs. That's my view is, let's spend more time to analyze the situation and understand the environment so that when by the time we provide our intervention, we provide our interventions that are speaking to the problems that we really understand, the situation that we really understand. At the moment, we are carrying on with our problems that we inherited by the community that has not given any positive results in as far as community development is concerned and leading our services to the process, leading the development of SMMEs and cooperatives to service delivery programs of the government. What do I mean by that? There is a decision on cooperatives being given the space plus new school nutrition program to operate there. But the presentation here doesn't speak about school nutrition program as a market. Yet there is an 18 billion SMMEs in Lapo. About the present level button, but yes, we have no access to the market. That is what the business is saying. Government is saying, what government as a whole is saying, we have a market for you, and the market is the school nutrition program. But your first plan doesn't speak to that market, that school nutrition program. And the instrument of developing our cooperative, that is, I couldn't know. If it's presentation here in Ubeyiti, we will assess the size of the market, the number of cooperatives that need to be developed to supply the school, what is the shortcoming in terms of the school nutrition program, how many SMEs, how many processing plants need to be established, and what is the nutrition value that is needed, what food stuff, how many agricultural cooperatives will be developed to supply the processing plant, and then the processing plant supplying the cooperatives that are looking. So there's been a different case. We will be saying, you understand alignment of development of food businesses to service delivery programs of government and poverty reduction. But gentlemen, individuals. We can't see what change will be brought about by that investment at community level and also reducing the burden of people that are sitting on the indigent register and the social fund register. I couldn't the presentation galo. I just wanted to let you know, Minister, those to us are the issues that are very, very important in terms of changing the way the department as things, or if the department is equally transient as much as it inherited functions that were done by the department must begin to speak to its mandate, and the department must begin to translate its mandate to address the problems, the felt needs, and also to link programs the department to the goals of the development to reduce poverty, create jobs, and reduce inequalities. That is what the direct plan has to speak to, and the profit and allocation level has to speak to that. Can we share what it's called, Naomi Lash?
Honorable, you have just collected questions. My questions are all answered, I think. You have seen them, right?
Design your program, your program must be speaking to this. Not the youth, because the youth in the NYDA. If NYDA is not addressing our problems, go to NYDA and say we cannot support people that are supposed to be supported by you. the same must happen to Sawel. If there is a program designed for women and it is underfunded and it is not doing what it's supposed to be able to do, let that program then be restructured to address the real needs that are affecting women in business, so that we avoid duplication and have focus. Let department has to respond to the needs of SMEs and cooperatives in terms of this life, because it is a department tasked with the responsibility of developing small, medium, micro enterprises. As far as I know, this life. And which one is bigger? Which then means the bigger allocation might go to the bigger in terms of that slide. The top one means those people are on the way to IGC. And yes, so we can't just be fighting to say which one belongs to us, which one belongs to IGC. IGC has got a different target market and we have different target markets. Number two, our incentives have to be informed by our conditions. And the information that will assist you to design those incentives is the State of South Africa. What was presented by State of South Africa would say, how are small businesses funded? Where does the money come from? And if most of them are funded, are self-funded, then there must be an incentive for self-funding a business. Both at expert level as well as at municipality level in terms of infrastructure. Let's break so that you can digest and come back. Of the draft budget vote at one of the portfolio committee. I will need messages from members on how to approach this. We wanted to have a few minutes to read the report, or can that go straight to it? Get a few minutes to read the report. That is the first option. The second option is go straight to discuss the report. And also deal with dramatic and spelling errors.
I'd like to request that we have half an hour to read the report.
Can we do that? Half an hour to read the report? All the programs and budget allocations that were done
throat to us to arrive at an informed decision on those that need to continue and those that need to be discontinued. So I would agree with the proposal made by Honorable Chang and seconded by Honorable Ramoga, that it is not correct for the department to discontinue that service, because first of all, in terms of the principle, it doesn't have to be continued because it is part of what was meant to happen. But secondly, it is what gives information out there to inform the client base of the department. You can't then make it a source of communication. So it is based on that that we are recommending that it be brought back.
Thank you, Chair. Can I continue? Okay, page 11, under Program 3, first block. It says 400 startups and growth initiatives and using corporates to access the fund. I'd like to know which fund is being referred to here. It doesn't refer to any fund earlier. So what is this fund? And the department isn't here to clarify that, but I think we need to know which fund is referred to. Do you get my point, Chair?
Okay. Program 3 has got financial and non-financial support services that are geared for enterprise development and entrepreneurship. Now, the department is saying 400 startups and growth-oriented SMEs and corporations to access that fund. That fund, which falls under enterprise development and entrepreneurship, which means that these are the corporations that will benefit from enterprise development and entrepreneurship. Challenge that we have, which I agree with you, Honorable Chance, is that as an education in terms of services that are provided by different funds that are located in each program, as well as different entities, like we have said during the presentation, that you would find Esteban talking about youth, and also find Esteban talking about what was the women disabilities. So that is the duplication that we are talking about. So I would then take that in raising that issue. We also locate it in the context of duplication, which then results with us not knowing . Okay, the minister always speaks about double dipping. She always makes reference to that. Double dipping, and she explains it in two different situations. She explains it in double dipping in terms of one and the same SMEs or cooperatives benefiting from one particular program, and without seeing any growth in terms of them being supported. Like for instance, the one on the exhibition, finding one and the same group of people going for exhibitions for many, many years, but you don't see them growing and everything in terms of that pyramid.
the second one that he refers to is double dipping in the sense that one SME or one cooperative benefiting from a number of programs. So I agree with the submission by the DA, but let us put that in the context of duplication of resources and also causing it difficult to measure the impact, which ends with running the same group of people or group of SMEs benefiting. Because even when the Deputy Minister makes reference of who has benefited in this exhibition, she keeps on referring to one person, Mama Nala. But there has been many people. But on her last submission, she said, Mama Nala had been going. When she passed away, the children took over the business. But the children are performing in the same way that Mama Nala was performing before she was assisted. Which then is a question mark as to what value was added by taking Mama Nala then, if she could leave the business, but a business that has not developed to an upper level or developed further, but which means that there was no transfer of skill in the family, and if that family had to be assisted, it would mean that again, Mama Nala's daughters must be put on the same program. Which is what we are questioning about the exhibition. That's it. Yes, exhibitions are good, but do they give birth to exports? Creating a sustainable export market. Because it can't be exhibition for 10 years and there is no establishment of a sustainable export market for goods that has been exhibited. Other than saying that this year we are exhibiting this product and next year, but on the following day, this product must have found now a sustainable market so that another product must come in, so that then we increase the percentage of export. It can't be the exhibition is the end product. And then we measure exhibition in terms of sales made during the exhibition. The exhibition, in my view, is a marketing exercise. You don't go there to sell goods. You go there to promote goods. It's a promotion exercise. Which then has to result with the establishment of a sustainable market. Yes, you make sales when you are exhibiting, because that's how you also test the market. But you can't be testing the market forever.
Shall I take the
picture? Can we then get an observation, a sentence, as well as a recommendation sent us for that?
Well, I think maybe it's, as you said, it's that the observation is that there are too many funds with overlapping mandates, and this causes the opportunity for double dipping and wasteful resources, and then the recommendation would be to have a consolidated look at the funds to make sure that each one is specifically targeting certain groups with overlapping target groups or, you know, beneficiary groups.
Also, the point that I'm making in observation is that other than double dipping, it makes it difficult to assess the impact and growth,
yes,
and development level of goods that
are being taken for exhibitions. I don't know how to paraphrase it. But that is the point I'm making.
I think that the point that you're making is that there needs to be, to use the technical terminology, longitudinal studies of impact. In other words, taking individual beneficiaries and tracking them over a number of years to make sure that the impact is sustained and at what point they need to be cast into the, you know, big wide world.
So that is the recommendation.
I thought I should just to amend it, Committee Chair, and say longitudinal and vertical, because I think what we seek to achieve is that the beneficiaries of the efforts of the department must spread to broadly, so that longitudinal, I take it is on that family, for an example, but to combine with the vertical so that the beneficiaries must be broad. Thanks, Commissioner.
Yes.
Yes.
I think this is correct.
Right.
Can continue on our chat?
Thank you. Yes. Page 12.
What I suggest you do is that, Lina, you correct the grammar and King take the new point, because King is used to that. Lina, you only focus on spelling and the grammatic correction. And then he concentrates on the new points that have been made because he's used to that. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Honourable Chance, you can continue.
Thank you, Chair. On page 12, the fourth block on the right-hand side refers to 80 municipalities. Right? Now, the trouble with that is that you have a municipality in one province which has maybe 20,000 inhabitants, and it's, you know, it's rural area, farmers, da-da-da-da-da. You have another municipality which is a couple of 100,000 or more, you know. So I think we need to be a bit more... a bit clear as to what, you know, are these vendors, how is the department going to identify these vendors? Do they just, you know, get a pin and stick it in a map? Or what are they going to do to, how are they going to do this? And I think this, I don't have the answer now, but I think that we need to make sure that the department adopts a considered approach to the selection of those municipalities which have the likelihood of the greatest impact in that particular 12-month period.
Yes, ma'am, I agree 100% with Honourable Charles. But remember, on that day with the presentation of the department, that municipalities was already identified.
Okay.
I asked a question, I can remember I asked a question in a committee meeting. And then afterwards, they sent me a list of this municipalities. So I've got the list somewhere on my email. I'll just try to look for it now. So that municipalities is already identified. How far they were the program, I don't know. That's a bit vague, but I know for a fact they identified the municipalities already.
With me, I don't have an issue with a number. I have an issue with that a red tape is something that affects SMMEs and cooperatives. It's not something that relates to a particular municipality. Like, for instance, one red tape is the non-payment or non-adherence by government departments on 30-day payment. That is a red tape. Okay. Now,
if you were issuing guidelines, guidelines are guidelines. When you have developed guidelines, you can then distribute guidelines to all municipalities. So why would there be a first batch of municipalities unless they don't have computers and email?
Yeah, I think if you look at that block to the left, it says red tape reduction guidelines institutionalized at all state institutions, not just informed about. That's a very different thing. I mean, you can send an email to all 286 municipalities or whatever it is tomorrow and then say, you know, tick that box. But having them institutionalized is a different story. It makes it a lot more difficult.
I read that. Let me read it again. Red tape reduction guidelines institutionalized at all state institutions. It's the guidelines that are going to be institutionalized. And for me, to institutionalize a guideline depends on that municipality or that state-owned entity. It's not the department that is going to go and institutionalize it. The department is going to issue the guidelines.
In that case, you can't have it as an objective. If it's not within your power to implement, then take it out.
Yes. That is the question that I'm asking that is, well, how is the department going to continue to roll out of red tape reduction guidelines?
Well, may I make the suggestion, Chair, that we take out the word institutionalized and replace 80 with 286? Because, I mean, that's all we're saying, isn't it? You can't, it's impossible for the Department of Small Business Development to institutionalize the guidelines in every single municipality or state institution. The first thing that they can do is to make sure that they know what they are. My colleague on the left may have a comment.
But also, the argument that I'm making is that a column number 2 says red tape reduction guidelines institutionalized in all state institutions, and municipalities are not all state institutions. And I have made reference of a red tape that has been raised by SMEs and cooperatives, the biggest one, elephant in the room, is non-adherence to 30-day payment. And the biggest culprit, not only municipality, it's national department. There are companies that have closed down.
I hope I'm with you, Colleague Chair, but given your motivation, it means we must address all three spheres of government and private sector.
Honourable Koga?
Yes, ma'am. See, that was the, that was my question on that specific day. And as I say, the answer was very vague, but there is somebody that's responsible now for red tape reduction in the department, number one. And number two, is they're going to roll out this new guidelines that they drawn up to this 18 municipalities as a test phase. And that was my understanding. So I don't know if it's exactly the same point there. But I mean, it's just a test phase to see if it's working. I mean, there's no way that they can take the guidelines and roll it out in 1 year to all the municipalities. If you can legislate it, then it's okay. If you legislate the guidelines, then it won't be a problem because then it's law. You either cut red tape or you promote red tape. That's the difference. But if you carry on with the guideline, you always have this problem.
Also, the way I read the sentence, it says continuous rollout of red tape reduction guidelines at 80
municipalities. But the one below that is saying monitoring framework for implementing of municipal red tape reduction guidelines. And then the next one is saying conduct study to develop guidelines for reduction of sector specific red tape and provincial at provincial levels. What I would prefer we do if we feel that they are piloting, like you are saying, Honorable Koga, it can't be continuous rollout. It can't be introduction of red tape because they are starting at least 80 municipalities. It can't be continuous. It can be continuous when they roll out to others. So my proposal would be that we leave that, but we change the word continuous rollout and put a pilot here. I'm saying that in our recommendation, they have put this like this. In our observation, we are observing that they are saying it is continuous, whereas they are starting to. It's not something that is happening, so it can't be a continuous thing. They are starting to roll out. Make that observation so that you can then have an opportunity of calling them back to report the progress that they have made in terms of covering the 80 municipalities as well as the impact of the guidelines that they would have rolled out.
Shall I continue, Chair? Thank you. Okay, page 15. Under strategic objective 2, under performance indicator stroke measure, second block, it says number of clients in the upper end of the SME sector assisted with interventions. Now, I'd like to know what they mean by upper end. It's a very vague term. Are they referring to size of business? In which case, number of employees, turnover, what's the measure? Have you found it there? So the next block is the same thing. You know, we're talking about in the left-hand column, proportion of clients in the upper end of the SME sector increased. So it really is a matter of what is the upper end. I mean, I think I can understand vaguely what they're getting at, but it's very vague. So I think if we can just make an observation and a recommendation saying that the department needs to be... It also refers... They're using the term gazelles, which again is a term which is out there, but it needs to be defined. And so the observation is that it's very unclear what is meant by upper end and gazelles, and the recommendation would be to define them. Is it rate of growth? Is it potential for growth? What are these things that define the upper end and the gazelles? Right?
Honorable
Comrade Chair, I suggest that we ask Luazi to step out and make a call to the DG now, the acting DG, just to clarify these 2 points. Because so that we draw ahead while awaiting the response.
But what I'm hearing here is that we are making an observation that the department
use the technology that is not, one, understandable, but secondly, that does not refer to what to the message that they want to convey. The first argument that we had in terms of the technology was that they are using the web instantly, and they are actually referring to grants. So if we make that as an observation, we wouldn't be correcting the situation in the department, starting from up to all officials that are submitting this report, and correcting the manner in which they communicate. But if we call the SDG to come and explain, we will not be addressing the problem where it is. The point that I'm making is that they should begin to use the technology that relates to the service and also conveys the message that they want to communicate. An observation was made yesterday that a sour program are more of a slogan, halal, zabaraz. And there is no one who would then go to a department looking for halal and zabaraz. A person would go to a department looking for either a grant or a finance or an infrastructure support service. It can't be halal. So what we are picking up from the department is that the department is not branding its services correctly for people to understand the kind of service that they are offered and what is it that they can expect. I don't know whether Honourable Mabas, you still feel?
I agree with you, Colleague Chair. The only way of suggesting that was reformed was just so that when we reformulate, we don't miss their explanation in case they have an explanation which is escaping us. Because at the end of the day, it is us who have a responsibility to write the report. It's not their report, it's our report. But it's good if we write after understanding them, what they meant, what they mean. But what we're saying, to say they must, I think, use the right terminology, that must be conveyed. Thanks, Commissioner.
Think it's showing you to the SIDA strategy. SIDA is a program team of the department. So you can't then expect SIDA to come in. It is the accounting officer is the acting DG. That is why we have been saying, do you know what is going to be presented by SIDA? You are asking that question to the department. Because the department is supposed to know each and everything. You can't have a head that doesn't know where the head is and where the leg is. Your head coordinates everything. So that is the point that Honourable Mabasa is saying, which is the acting DG must come to explain the issues that we are raising. So that even if we make an observation, having understood what we were trying to say in terms of Honourable Chan.
Even if the DG doesn't come, Commissioner, even if he explains over the phone.
Just so much. Have you ever come in? Can you hear it?
Thanks, Chair. Page 16, under the CEDA budget, the bottom, 12.3. budget allocation for strengthening the organization to deliver on its mandate. It sounds like a lot to me. It's a heck of a lot. 25% of its budget, or nearly 27% of its budget to strengthen its to strengthen the organization. I just think that we need a bit more detail on that. My observation is that it's a large amount of money in proportion to the total, and I think we need to know what they're going to spend it on and how will it strengthen the organization. Have you got that?
Yes.
And then, what will be the effect of that expenditure? Is it an annual expenditure? What a theory it is. It's going up every year. You know, we're talking about a chunk of money. So what are they going to do with it that is going to show impact? See? If it's something that strengthens the delivery of a mandate, then the performance of the organization should grow exponentially. Otherwise, that's just a support service.
I am in total agreement with you, Honourable John. In terms of ratio, a support service should take 20% of the budget and 80% should go to program. Now, if you look at this ratio, the support service is even above the quarter of the budget. It is 26.7. Yet, it is an entity that outsources. So that begins to tell that the money gets a long way before it gets to the end user, because when you look at the budget, then Assist SMM is in technology through the organization technology program. That is 19.9% of the budget. But the strengthening the organization to deliver on its mandate is 26.7%. And we're not being presented with the organogram of the leader. All that we have been shown is the blueprint. And that footprint is actually increasing when we are saying they must relocate and share space with other people. So I agree with that. But again, one should look at this in relation to the lament that Cesar would make each time they are making a presentation. That we are losing people because they are being forced, we are paying less salary and all those things. So if they have been talking about that, it could be possible that they are thinking of increasing salaries. Because they are not specific. So what is it that they are, what is this item going to do in strengthening the capacity?
I'm saying, sir, at that point, is it the one linked to point 15 other observations? So, what you are saying talks to that.
The observation that we are making is that the budget allocation
does not follow the 80-20 ratio. Where a support service does not have to get more than 20% of the budget, and 80% has to go to programs. And in this case, the support service is getting more than, is getting 26.7%, which is more than the quarter.
Yeah.
No, but.
No, I agree with you, Comrade Chair, that that point must be made. The only overall point that I would propose we don't miss is that out of all the agencies and the programs that are, that have been moved to us, we must strive that they must not get less a budget than they were getting, you know, historically. In general, so that that becomes our attitude, because the reality is that we are in a transition. So, but being in a transition must not mean that wrong things must be done. They must be corrected so that it becomes 20-20. But overall, must slightly increase in view of inflation. The worst scenario would be where it is. What it was. Thanks for it.
I agree with the Honourable Minister. That's not what we are meaning, that they must get less. What we are saying is that out of the total budget allocated to them, they are then spending 26.7% as opposed to the ceiling of 20% for support services.
Can I continue that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, page 17, 12.4, third bullet. This here refers to Gazelle's program. Now, it's possible that I wasn't in the presentation because I was overseas when the department presented, but maybe the department can, or you can, or members of the committee can elucidate on whether they did actually present this program, because it's the first I've seen of it.
The program was not explained in detail, and when they were making a presentation, I also made an observation that Honorable Charles said we were happy that the department was talking about the result, and he said it will be interesting to understand how the department is going to implement that. And I was then expecting that when we discuss in the absence of the department, not a chance to enrich our knowledge, because I'm also not familiar with that. Like I have done, I have imparted a lot of the knowledge that I have to the portfolio committee. And I think that that is the responsibility of each and every member that is serving here, to make all of us understand so that we would then be able to question the department.
Thank you, Chair, for that clarification. Look, I would be happy to make a presentation to the committee at some point in the future. I think in the meantime, we can safely assume that there isn't a Gazelles program within the department. I think they're probably overstating their, you know, their state of readiness. So I would say that rather than that sentence saying implementation of the Gazelle program, we should rather say development and implementation of the Gazelle program.
I think that that point is also taken in the same context that we have said. Let us make an assessment, and we have recommended to the department that they must hold an inclusive strategic plan, which would include officials from the department as well as all the entities that are working with the department,
together with the portfolio committee, so that they can, the department can also take advantage of the experience that sits in the portfolio committee, so that we can enrich their process of developing a stress plan, and also so that everybody can come to a common understanding, so that when they come to us to present things, we would have known even the meaning and the objective of doing that, so that on our own now, in developing our overall stress plan, we are then able to identify tools of assessment, how we are going to assess that. That is the reason we have always been saying, it's a new department, it needs our planning, let the department put aside 3 to 4 days so that we can all be under one roof. We will have a better understanding of how they do certain things, as well as how they, why they are structuring their program in a particular session. They will also have an advantage of the change and understanding of how we think, so that we don't operate as us and them. We operate as people that are concerned and are passionate and want to see development of SMMEs in TGB. That is the reason why. We are not interfering with their processes, but we want to be at the same level, because it's a new department, it is at a blank stage. And I agree with you, Honorable Chancellor. You'll be given an opportunity to empower us of what the gazelles are and how they work, what could be of benefit of those, and then also you do the same. To scrutinize when we are in that workshop, because Nina, I don't know anything about it, and you are the only person that knows. And there are things that I know that some other members don't know. So it must be a cross-pollination exercise.
So I can see, sir. Okay. Okay, page 18. Fifth line from the bottom. It says, growing the micro-enterprise loan book through innovative products, da 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 da. Now, I very much question that strategy on the basis that I think it was already said by CEDA and indeed CIFA that there was a disproportionate emphasis on micro-enterprises had very limited capacity to grow and create jobs. And it seems that they're going in different directions. That CIFA is going in the micro route and CIDA is going the higher end route, you know, the upper ends route. It's precisely the point that needs to be made, that these organizations are like the push and pull. So I think the observation should be that fact. All that observation. The CEDA and CIFA need to have a strategy alignment. Or, at least if they don't, they need to explain their reasoning. And that the recommendation should be that, you know, each of their strategies should be guided by the overall objective of job creation and economic growth.
For me, I would agree with that, but I also add the point that I made when I said their program and product are gender-based, whereas they are supposed to be tracking to the stage of development of an SME and the cooperative. Geographical location. They must be influenced by a number of things that affect the growth and development of a small business. So, in addition to what Honorable Chancellor said, I would want that also to be captured and included.
Okay.
but it also speaks to that. If the environment for development of the survival is not created, and you think that you can create the same environment for a survival that you would create for a medium-sized enterprise, the survival won't survive there. It's like putting Yes. But I always like to make this, because we are dealing here with small businesses, I always like to make an example of an infant. If you put a child that was born on full term, you put a child that was born before the full term pregnant, that needs to be put in an incubator, and you take that child and put it with the children that were born on full term, that child won't survive, because that child needs a closed environment as if that child is still in the womb. Which is why there has been this question of why incubators would remain with DTI. Because DTI is dealing with businesses that are at a flying level. It's businesses that do not have a risk of dying, like a child that needs incubation. That child is put in an incubator because it has got a risk of dying, which means even along with the incubator, you still need to have a service of what you do if the incubator doesn't have an effect of growing this child. What do you do? Do you write off? Do you provide guarantees to that you will write off? Do you give a holiday period until the child is out of an incubator? What is it that you do? And what stage of development requires incubation? And for me, if one can really speak about our observation of incubators that we saw when we went out today, I would want us to evaluate the impact of the incubators. Because where we went in the, what is the park? No. What was it? The one that has got a few pairs of shoes and a few bags.
The empowerment zone.
Okay. Yes. That to me says that other than scrutinizing the effect of our intermediary, of giving loans through intermediaries, we also need to scrutinize the effect of incubators. Because, you know, what I saw there left, okay, I can say I was not as impressed as what I saw in this season. Honorable Chan, we were not there when we went to Bosetis. Bosetis is a small, it's an SMME, but it is an SMME that has positioned itself to reduce the cost of doing business for small businesses. And it has designed mobile infrastructure, like mobile saloons that are using solar, diesel, water. So instead of
heating the water and paying for rent and paying for electricity. You have a mobile phone that you can move around depending on where more customers are. And you pay one for the infrastructure. You buy the container, and then you have the container has got a water collecting tank, and then it has got a solar driven geyser that you can use. And then also says, well, it is a small business, but it is a small business that is thinking of how to reduce the cost of doing business for other small businesses. Another type of a container there is the mobile butcher. Another type of a container was a mobile kitchen. Another one is something that produces internet. Yes, internet and other. Another one is which was not there, but it is on another side that either so. It's got sewing machine, and then the shelf on which you can put all your material. And it's saying that these sewing machines are solar driven. So that is the cost of reducing the. Now, if you take that kind of an intervention and match it with the money that is spent on incubators, when we went there, we saw a very closely financial report that was given by the incubator to us, and a very well finished, but I guess it is for conducting the classes to provide the training. But the point that I'm making is that when you then go to the store where people that are businesses that are being incubated, you don't see the level of incubation that you would see when you go to COA. And COA would say, these people are standard three. We have trained them to do this. And we are now at a level where we are registering them so that they become cooperative, and we move on, and we are registering a number of them, identifying farms to give a law. To me, COA is more of an incubator than the incubator that we saw in the empowerment zone. Because even the ties that were being made, all that we were told was that these ties are manufactured out of this material. We were not told how many orders do they have, what is it that they are supplying, which target market is actually there for this type of time. Yes, they are made of recycled material, but then who is buying them?
No, Colleague Chair, I agree with you on these observations. The only remark that I will make is the Soweto Empowerment Zone. What I will remark is that I think we need to revisit them, so that we study the whole thing thoroughly. Because you see, when it comes to these incubations, etc., we need to create a good time. And then the other thing is also to explore and understand the partnering that exists between the spheres, so that the way we approach the issues, it is in such a manner that we move alongside the other spheres, where we find that it is a jointly funded thing, and the initiative, we may even find that the initiative is not necessarily ours, but we are coming in as a complementary. So I thought I should make those points.
Yes, for me, it is an important point that you are making, Honorable Mabat, because the department also is mandated to sign transversal agreements with different spheres of government as well as other departments.
for purposes of coordination of our resources and efforts in order to have a maximum impact using a combined budget. Take a little bit from there, take a little bit from there, take a little bit from there, and then you have an adequate support system or an adequate budget that would make that small business or a cooperative to survive. So I would still maintain that in our assessment, we need to also, the observation that we are making is that empowerment zones are a good initiative because you are actually incubating. But we also need to make the same assessment in terms of the effectiveness of the incubator as well as the coordination of resources that would make people that are located in the empowerment zone to sustain their businesses and grow their businesses. That is the observation and the recommendation.
Yes.
I'm back to Honorable Chan.
Okay, sir. Thank you. I'll try and be quick. Sorry.
The response from, you know, the response from Bindo is that by SMM is on the upper end, we are referring to those SMEs that will make a bigger impact in terms of job creation and economic growth, e.g. gazelles. Those are the opposite of the survivalist and micro-enterprises. That's the explanation that has been given by Bindo. Honorable Chan.
All right.
Yes.
So this means the statement is such that it is to the exclusion of the survivalists, so that because we are interested in box 3A.
The question that was asked by Honorable Chan was in reference to strategic objective number 2. The second column from the top and the third column from the left. Then it reads as follows. Number of clients in the upper end of the SMMB sector assisted with interventions. So the question that was asked by Honorable Chance was, what is the meaning of the upper end of SMMEs there? Because we have, in terms of that pyramid, we have the survivalist, we have survivalist, the micro, small, and medium. But also I want somebody to help me here. I was at the consultative conference in 1995 when the idea of SMMEs was discussed in South Africa. At that time that discussion was led by Minister Trevor Manuel. My understanding of SMME is that it starts with small. That's why it says small, micro, small, micro, small, small, medium, and micro. Okay. But in terms of this pyramid, Honorable Chan,
I believe the acronym was developed for ease of pronunciation. Otherwise, it would have been S M E S. It would have started with the micro. In terms of the scaling, it's micro, small, medium. So it would have been S M M E. Oh, sorry, E. Started with a micro. M. Exactly. MSME, as opposed to SMME. It's just a matter of ease of pronunciation. It's counterintuitive.
But then, we are studying at the library. We are studying at the library. Then we get to micro. And then we get to small. And then we get to media. Yes, on the front.
All right. So are we done with that point? That is.
With me. I would prefer that we stick to the language that we understand. If we are referring to medium as the upper, let us put medium instead of saying the upper end.
Sorry, I don't think that's necessarily what they're talking about. I think that they're referring to the growth rate. Because if Gazelle definitionally is a high growth potential business. It might start off as small, but the idea is that it ends up as medium pretty quickly.
Medium.
So, you know, most survivalist businesses are not going to be a Gazelle. Some small, some micros will be, but they're much harder to identify. So I think that my recommendation is that we ask the department to clarify the definitions in terms of their size and their growth rate potential. That's the two key metrics.
So in the recommendation then, in dealing with the issue of the upper end, we should give that as a recommendation.
Yes. We need to distinguish, the targets must distinguish between absolute size and growth rate.
So if they are referring to the Gazelle, they are referring to micro. They are referring to the high
growth.
Yes.
Right. So I can see.
Can you make an example of the high growth on Arushan?
Well, I mean, 20 years ago, Adrian Gore created Discovery Health. He started with R1 million from Brand Merchant Bank. You know, he came over from Liberty Life. He had the idea of a medical savings account. He went to Brand Merchant Bank. He said, I've got this idea. They said, here's R1 million. Now it's employed 30,000 people. So Brand Merchant Bank identified that. He was a micro business. He was one employee. He wasn't even an employee. It was a nothing. It was an idea. But it became 30,000 employee business. The same with Naspers. Tom Foster, who was the chairman of Naspers 30 years ago, had a young business graduate called Kurt Becker come to see him with an idea for a paid TV station. That's now Mnet. That's now Naspers. It's a 700 billion rand company on the JZ. That's what I'm talking about.
The other one is Mark Shuttleworth.
Shall I continue?
The other one is the guy who went to WhatsApp.
Yes. Right, page 19, 13.4 at the bottom. I think that when this was written, it was correct to say that Isivani had not presented a strategic plan, but it now has. In, you know, inadequate though it may be, it had been presented. So that is to be, as a family has recently presented, as opposed to not, in my opinion. Then I think the next
question, correct?
Okay. Next point is paragraph, sorry, page 20, second paragraph, first bullet point. It says, it has been established that the strategic plan of Samhain does not align with the strategic plan of the Spartan. Well, in a way it does. It's not, again, it's not perfect, but it's, at least they've made an attempt to align it.
It was there. It has to change to reflect the revised strategic plan.
Right. And then the next sentence, it should just be changed, I think, simply to read, together these institutions constitute 2% of total budget of the department. So to read together these institutions constitute. Thank you.